What's the best way to invest a lump sum of money, like an insurance or settlement payout? Next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio with New York Times best-selling author and your host, Doug Andrew.
This is Doug Andrew speaking to you, our incredible national audience, from our three-dimensional wealth studios nestled at the base of the majestic Rocky Mountains. This show is about empowering you, people, and organizations that want to optimize their assets, minimize taxes, and empower their authentic wealth. Folks, you may be aware I have a YouTube channel. If you subscribe, it's free. And I post an answer to an in-depth financial question daily. And recently I answered this question that has been asked hundreds of times. Doug, what's the best way to invest a lump sum of money? Now, a lot of times people get an inheritance or what have you, sort of a windfall. They sell their business or whatever. But most of the time when they get a lump sum, it's an insurance settlement, a death benefit, or an accident settlement from a lawsuit or whatever. And so they have $100,000, they have $500,000, they have $1 million, $5 million, whatever. And people say, what is the best thing to do with this lump sum? Well, let's assume for the sake of time here that it's an insurance settlement. If it's life insurance and it came from a death benefit, a death claim, you need to be aware, life insurance proceeds are totally income tax free to the beneficiary. The only time they may be taxable is if the insurance policy was purchased by somebody as an investment or whatever. But let's just assume the lump sum death benefit payout is going to a beneficiary that was named at the time the policy was taken out or maybe changed, but they are suffering an economic loss by virtue of the insured's death. And so it will be tax-free. Now, my advice when people get a lump sum that's tax-free is, first of all, keep it tax-free, okay? Why would you take a tax-free payout and then put it somewhere that's now going to create taxable interest or tax on it as it grows? I go, hello? The beauty here is you're getting $100,000. You're getting $1 million and it's tax-free. Keep it tax-free. They go, well, how do I do that? And I go, you put it right back into a maximum funded insurance policy in most cases, because if you got $1 million payout and it's tax free, and let's say you're 60 years old, you can put that $1 million into a $2.5 million policy. And people say, wait, a $2.5 million life insurance policy costs $1 million. I go, no, you can get way more insurance than $2.5 million for $1 million. But the objective is to have that million grow tax free at the best net internal rate of return, so that the cost of the insurance is only draining out maybe one percentage point of the interest you're earning. If you can earn, like I have and many hundreds of our clients have, let's say an 8, 9, or 10% rate of return, some years even higher. If you can earn 11%, like many did, for an average in 25 years from the time that indexing came out in 1997, if you earn 11, you can net 10 cash on cash internal rate of return. The difference between 11 and 10 is the 1% that pays for the insurance that the IRS says has to be there, or it will not accumulate tax-free. And so this is where I have advised many, many people, well, put it back into a max-funded insurance contract, and you will earn rates of return of 6, 7, 8% or more. Some years you'll earn way higher. Some years you may not earn anything, but you don't lose if the market goes down if you use indexed insurance policies. And so they want to keep it liquid and safe so they can access the money, but keep it tax-free. And if death occurs in the future, it blossoms to $2.5 million and transfers income tax-free. To me, this is a no-brainer. So every time I see people get a tax-free payout from a settlement, we advise them, hey, you want to strongly consider keeping that tax-free by putting, you know, at least 20% of that on the next oldest person in your family. And even if you minimum fund the policy, it will blossom every time the next person in your family passes away. It blossoms in value and keeps it tax-free. And so you ought to consider some or all of the money being put right back into the beautiful instrument that created the lump sum tax-free payout in the first place. But you can use it for living benefits, income. If you put $1 million that's tax-free into a max-funded indexed universal life, you can predictably generate $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year, maybe $100,000 a year, an 8 to 10% payout of tax-free income. And so why wouldn't you want to do that? Why would you put it into something that is going to be taxable? It would have to have a whale of a great rate of return and tremendous safety to consider that over putting the money into a max-funded insurance policy that passes the liquidity, safety, and rate of return test with flying colors. And so, as I mentioned, $1 million tax-free lump sum payout, a death benefit or what have you, could end up generating $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year of tax-free cash flow. And at the end of the day, when that person passes away, it blossoms to $2.5 million and transfers income tax-free. What other investment do you know of that could do something like that? Along these lines, besides taking lump sums and generating income or letting it accumulate tax-free, because $1 million could double in 7 to 10 years to $2 million, and then $2 million doubles to $4 million. So I've helped many people with the lump sums double that every, 7 to 10 years tax-free. But every $1 million you have, you can generate $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year of tax-free income without depleting principal. And at the end of the day, it will oftentimes double or triple and transfer to the next generation or whoever the beneficiary is, totally tax-free. I know of no other financial instrument that does that. But let me say this. You ready? The worst advice, I feel, that is given to widows when they lose their husband is, oh, we'll take the life insurance proceeds and pay off your house. And I go, what? But that is the most common advice I hear given to widows to take life insurance proceeds after their husband dies in an accident or natural cause or whatever. Hey, take the money and pay off your house. Why is that the worst advice? Listen close. Because the easiest way for a widow to be able to establish credit, a credit history on their own, okay, is by doing it or proving it without having to qualify for a new mortgage. You wouldn't believe how many times I've seen widows pay off their house and then a couple of years later, all of a sudden they have a business opportunity or they need to get an equity line of credit. They need that money back out of the house and they think, well, I have equity in my house. I'll just go borrow it. But the lending institution says, where's your credit? It doesn't look very good. What? I should have super credit. I haven't borrowed money for years. Well, hello. That's why you have no credit history. And so these poor widows are trying to have to prove that they can qualify to use a resource like the equity in their home or whatever. And they could have just continued to pay the mortgage payment for a couple of years out of a portion of the interest on those life insurance proceeds. And that's tax deductible. And the money coming out of the life insurance is tax-free. Hello. And those that have done that have been so grateful because anytime they want, they could take the lump sum and pay off the house. But if that widow establishes a couple of years of making timely mortgage payments, then they go qualify for a refinance, okay? I know of two widows recently that have refinanced their homes. They would have a very hard time doing that if they didn't have a proven history of making those timely mortgage payments and establishing their own credit two or three or four years after their husband had passed away. But if you just pay everything off and then you don't have any credit history, you're going to have a real hard time. Now, that's just one reason that I feel like the worst advice given into widows is to pay everything off. You can take the interest on that money and keep making payments and establish credit way easier than going out and trying to qualify for new credit on your own.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.
How much should you have in an emergency fund, and where is the best place to put your money earmarked as your emergency fund? I'll answer that next on Three Dimensional Wealth Radio. This is Doug Andrew. Welcome back if you're just joining us. So, I've always recommended that people have an emergency fund that would get them through all kinds of emergencies, whether it was caused by a disability, a health setback, a layoff. We've had a pandemic here this year. And so people have had to oftentimes dip into an emergency fund. And frankly, this talks about not only money, but also having on hand some maybe food supply, maybe some fuel to be able to heat your home if you go without power for two or three or four days, like people in California have had to do many, many times when the power company shuts down because of the fires. And so people have asked hundreds, if not thousands of times every single month on my YouTube channel, how much should a person have in an emergency fund, Doug? And where's the best place to put my money in the bank? Okay, now, let me say this. Most emergencies that I have observed usually last about 3 to 6 months. Now, I know they can go longer, but most emergencies only last about 3 to 6 months. So I would strongly recommend that you have 6 months, maybe up to a year, of your income for emergencies, okay? Now, people say, whoa, that's a lot of money. Well, your emergency fund can double as your retirement account. Your emergency fund, but see, a lot of people, they don't understand that because they think, well, if I touch my IRA or 401k, there's a 10% penalty, and that's not a good place to have my emergency fund. And yet people, when push comes to shove, they take money out of their IRA or 401k, even with a 10% penalty, because they're in an emergency, okay? They have to have some money. Well, don't be penalized. And so I'm going to share with you where I would recommend that you have this emergency fund. But I would recommend that you work towards having 6 months up to a year of income. So whatever your income is, you ought to have at least that. Let's say you make $60,000 a year. You should have probably $60,000 in an emergency fund. If you make $100,000, yeah, you ought to have $100,000 that's liquid and safe that you could tap into with an electronic funds transfer or a phone call, okay? And so most emergencies probably only last about 3 to 6 months, but it would be good to have maybe up to 12 months. Now, the biggest problem I see is that most people think that the emergency fund should be liquid, and they equate liquidity to convenience, meaning a drive-up window at a bank or a credit union. Well, okay, so I need the money in a bank or credit union because that's convenient. Well, they think that means liquid. Frankly, they're shocked when I say, well, you know what? If things really, really got bad, a bank or a credit union could say, sorry, we can't give you any money for 6 months. Now, they generally don't do that because that can cause a run on the bank and so forth. But let me just tell you that I like to have my liquid emergency fund with the institutions that are ranked about 6 notches higher on the average than banks and credit unions. What are those? The multi-trillion dollar insurance industry. And I like to have my emergency fund deposited in a legal reserve insurance company that would be like rated triple A compared to a lot of banks that maybe are only rated triple B. And the difference between those two are six notches. But back in 2008, when about 400 banks went under and 900 more were on the watch list, the federal government asked the five major banks in America, okay, disclose where you have your tier one assets for liquidity and safety. Banks, where do you have your emergency funds invested? Guess what the banks revealed? 30 to 40% of their tier one assets, their emergency funds, are invested in BOLI, bank-owned life insurance. On who? Well, whoever, the board of directors or whatever. They're borrowing money from us, 1%? Banks pay us 1%. They turn around, they put it in insurance companies that pay them 4 or 5%. How much more is 5% than 1? And some people say 4. No, it's 5 times. It's 500% more. Banks borrow our money, and they pay $10,000 a year in interest. They turn around and earn $50,000 a year of interest by putting it into the multi-trillion dollar insurance industry. They increase the safety by 6 notches and the rate of return by 5 times. You can bypass the banker credit union because, in actuality, you can access money during an emergency easier out of an insurance company than you can out of a bank or a credit union. That's why banks put their money in these institutions, okay? And so that's what I would do, and you can increase the safety considerably, and you can earn a rate of return more like 4, 5, 6, or 7, or 8%, which is far greater than your emergency fund in a bank getting 1% or less. So just do what the banks do to have their emergency funds. Where do banks put their money for emergencies? Does that make sense? So access your money if you have an emergency without penalties, without a 10% penalty by the IRS or having to pay tax. If you take money out of a tax-deferred IRA or 401k before age 59 and a half, there's a 10% penalty on top of the tax, but you have to pay tax on that. If you need a net of 100 grand, you have to pull out 150,000 to net 100,000 after paying tax, because most people will pay up to a third in taxes, especially if they're taking out a lump sum, because that all has to be included in one single tax year. Now, the unique thing about COVID-19 is the government has allowed people who have experienced a hardship, and hello, almost everybody's experienced a hardship, to be able to access money out of their IRAs or 401ks up to 100 grand, and you can spread the tax liability over a three-year period, and they'll waive the 10% penalty. So there's sometimes opportunities to access money in an emergency, but in an IRA or 401k, you got to pay the tax sooner or later. And so why would you do that unless you absolutely had to? I put mine into my max funded insurance contracts because I can access the money. There's no penalty from the IRS. If I put in, you know, $300,000, which you can't put into a Roth or anything like that, and 30 days later I need $250,000 back, I can pull that back out again for an emergency or a business opportunity. I don't have to ask anybody's permission. It's super liquid, and it doesn't trigger tax. It's tax-free when I do it. Hello? So that's where I keep my own money for emergencies, and it's been used many, many times. People who I've helped this with, it has been a godsend for them when they had a setback or they got sick or disabled or they got laid off. When they were able to access money out of their liquid emergency fund that's been earning 5, 6, 7, 8%, sometimes they're like, oh, I've been earning such good rates of return on this. I hate to pull it out. I mean, if this was in a bank, I would only be losing 1%. No, you don't want to have your money in some bank because you think they're not charging you. No, it's indirectly costing you because they're only paying you 1%. And where are they putting your money? I just told you. They're putting it out and increasing the safety and the rate of return by 5 times. So emergency funds are extremely important, but you can use what I call the laser fund, a max funded tax advantage insurance contract, as an emergency fund. And if you don't need it for emergencies, or if you pay it back, you can do that. You can take the money out, put it back. It's so flexible, and it can be doubling as your retirement account, or for business owners as your working capital account, or for real estate investors as your capital account for managing your real estate. It can be used for all kinds of things, and that's why I like it. It's so diverse. It's like a financial Swiss Army knife.
This is Three Dimensional Wealth Radio.